White Aryan Resistance calling. White Aryan Resistance calling. This is the White Aryan Resistance Radio Network. Your host for today's show is Tom Metzger, Terrible Tommy. So get a spot of tea, sit down and relax, because it's time for another show on the White Aryan Resistance Radio Network.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. Here's Terrible Tommy in the bunker right here in north central Indiana on a nice day. Yeah, it's a little cool this morning, but still going to have a lot of sunshine. We had a beautiful summer day yesterday. Wow, I can't believe it. Wow. It is February the 20th, 2017, and we got a half moon up there, so whatever that means to you, if that floats your boat, that's good. Okay. Well, let's see what we're going to do today. We're going to play today. Well, let's see here. Like the song says, I've been working around here, working like a nigger for my room and board. Yeah, man, I've been straining my back and tote that barge and lift that bale. Sass the boss and you'll end in jail. Well, let's get a refresher course from our friend Walter Dennis. I've never met Walter Dennis. I don't know really where he came from. He just came out of the blue and recorded this for me a few years ago, and we've been playing it every once in a while. So you need this refresher course. Here we go.
I'd like to ask you something. What would America's founding fathers have done if they knew that someday a black man would be president of the United States? Our first president, George Washington, and many of his compatriots owned thousands of Negro slaves. Others, such as Thomas Jefferson, tried deporting America's black population to a West African state still known as Liberia. He wrote into the U.S. Constitution, Article 1, Section 2, that a Negro shall be considered only 3/5 of a person, a non-citizen, unable to vote. Today, if you travel to our nation's capital, you'll read the following words inscribed in stone on the Jefferson Memorial. Quote, "Nothing is more certainly written in the book of fate than that these people, the Negroes, are to be free." Unquote. Thomas Jefferson's statement is allowed to end there, leaving visitors with the impression that our third president was a liberal integrationist. But this quotation from his autobiography has been taken out of its original context. Someone has selectively deleted the rest of Jefferson's words, which are, quote, "Nor is it less certain that the two races, equally free, cannot live in the same government. Nature, habit, opinion have drawn indelible lines of distinction between them." Unquote. But what about Abraham Lincoln? He freed the slaves, so he must have loved them. Liberals like to imagine that by calling upon his memory, they lend authority to their racially integrated agendas. But this is what Lincoln said during his fourth presidential debate on September 18, 1858. Quote, "I will say then that I am not, nor ever have been, in favor of bringing about in any way the social and political equality of the black and white races. That I am not, nor ever have been, in favor of making voters or jurors of Negroes, nor of qualifying them to hold office, nor to intermarry with white people. And I will say, in addition to this, that there is a physical difference between the black and white races which will ever forbid the two races living together on terms of social and political equality. And inasmuch as they cannot so live, while they do remain together, there must be the position of superior and inferior. And I, as much as any other man, am in favor of having the superior position assigned to the white race." Unquote. Today, any politician running for public office, in fact, anyone making such a statement, would be loudly condemned as a racist of the worst possible kind, expelled from school or fired from his job, and arrested on charges of committing a hate crime. Yet Lincoln, Jefferson, and Washington are supposed to be our country's great icons. No teacher, no one in the news or entertainment media will ever tell you what these men actually believed about so-called Afro-Americans. Nor will they tell you that blacks are responsible for more than 80% of violent crimes committed in our country, even though Negroes make up just 12% of its population. That must come as a shock to regular viewers of television, where blacks are around half the faces seen on the tube. Unlike their real-life versions, televised blacks are almost invariably portrayed as pitiful victims of injustice at the hands of white bigots, or lovable heroes deserving our adoration and emulation. This is because television is nothing more than a backed-up toilet overflowing with lies. It is a font of poison floating with stinking falsehoods in which truth dies and sinks. Beginning after the turn of the last century, race-mixing propagandists have taken particular delight in elevating half-breeds to superstar status. Television personalities and political celebrities of black and white parentage are more often placed upon the highest public pedestals for special homage. At the same time, no opportunity is missed to promote racially mixed unions, typically of a blonde white woman to a blue-black male, together with the couple's half-breed offspring, which invariably take after their African father. When we look around the world at racially mixed countries, we find such exotic lands as India, Morocco, and Mexico. These places are human garbage dumps, characterized by squalor, violence, starvation, filth, and disease on a colossal scale of hopeless misery. They were not always so. 4,000 years ago, a civilization of clean-swept boulevards and magnificent public baths flourished throughout the Indus Valley. 2,000 years later, Morocco was set with marble temples and gleaming health spas, a jewel in the crown of the Roman Empire. 500 years ago, conquistadors from Spain raised a prosperous colony upon the ruins of Aztec Indian human sacrifice and cannibalism. All of these formerly high cultures in Mexico, Morocco, and India were created exclusively by white civilizers. While colored natives may have supplied some of the labor, civilization was the product of white genius. So long as the white master builders preserved their dominance and racial integrity, society functioned as intended. But as they interbred with Negroes and other lowlife, white identity drowned in a raceless morass of darkening generations that bore less and less resemblance to their fair-skinned founding fathers. Their originally high intelligence level sank into an increasingly dumber and savage population. The once splendid civilizations of the Indus Valley, Central America, and North Africa decayed into the rotting urban centers now known as New Delhi, Tijuana, or Marrakesh. America stands in the same shadow that eventually reduced these formerly civilized centers to subhuman cesspools. Such putrid places graphically represent the goal set for our country by fanatic integrationists who embrace race mixing with all the fervor of religious extremists. Their aim is to reduce the United States to another Bangladesh or Sudan. The mass murderers of our posterity flaunt their sympathy for the colored downtrodden of this world in order to parade what they imagine is a kind of moral superiority over everyone else. These people are truly insane. Their real core motivation is a psychopathic loathing for everything and everyone white. That only can explain such hysterical intolerance of the slightest criticism for the race-mixed utopia they demand. They cannot work fast enough for the eventual extirpation of the white race through wholesale interbreeding with Congoid apes. Their aim is the dissolution of all the world's races into a single global soufflé of genetic excrement. And anyone who raises an objection to their high-minded nightmare is condemned and ostracized as a racist, an enemy to what is ever fair and good. Yet, what we take for granted today as civilization is the exclusive product of white men and women, from computers and hair curlers to bicycles and space shuttles, everything we know as modern technology was brought about entirely by white inventors. It stands to reason that when their kind no longer exists, their creations will disintegrate, just like old American cars falling apart in the littered streets of Mexico City. While white people were building great civilizations around the world for the last 5,000 years, blacks in Africa never figured out how to make a wheel. They never built anything more substantial than a mud hut. They knew nothing about metal, glass, or tool. They never had a written language. Their technology did not extend beyond the tip of their wood spears. Their only medicine was voodoo. They never sailed on anything greater than a floating log, even though they resided along thousands of miles of coastline. And all this centuries before they could claim slavery as an excuse for their utter lack of know-how. They never put one stone upon another, thought of a light bulb, invented an airplane, designed a fountain pen, wrote a poem, painted a portrait, or initiated anything associated with civilized life. Although Afro-Americans have come to benefit from these things and more, they created none of them. They have always excelled, however, in those activities which characterize them best: violent behavior and monumental squalor. For proof, drive through the south side of Chicago, into Gary, Indiana, or black streets in any metropolitan area, if you dare. There you will see old, rotting buildings tottering above gang-infested sinkholes of urban filth. These are the ruins of white civilization, microcosms for what the rest of America is becoming. This national decay translates itself into escalating murders, assaults, rapes, robberies, and a virtual tidal wave of atrocities committed daily against white men, women, and children. Considered more important than their own self-defense, they are cautioned against racism when identifying their dark assailants. Because followers of the race-mixing dogma are indifferent to these white victims, outsiders rarely learn of their fate. They are not showcased on television, nor featured on the front page of a major newspaper. For example, a few years ago, charges were leveled against Duke University students accused of gang raping an innocent black girl. Months before the high-profile case collapsed because their ultra-liberal prosecutor was disbarred for falsifying the evidence against them, and the accuser herself turned out to be a lying half-wit, they were tried and found guilty by every major American newspaper and television network. The young white men were simultaneously and universally castigated as racists of the most awful type, meriting the severest punishment. Reverends Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson made daily telecasts deploring the climate of intolerance and sick racism that pervades our country. FBI spokesmen speculated that the alleged gang rape was a hate crime. Social services liberals swung into action to provide counseling and financial assistance for the bogus black victim and her family. While the falsely accused white students were being vilified across the nation week after week, Americans were pointedly not informed of another, this time authentic atrocity that was absolutely boycotted, deliberately ignored, hushed up, even censored from public knowledge. In a successful effort to contain all outside awareness of the story, no network anchorman or mainstream reporter announced the arrest in Kentucky of four black men and one black female for perpetrating some of the most ghastly crimes ever committed in U.S. history. They were accused of abducting and murdering a young white couple. While his girlfriend looked on, they castrated Christopher Newsom, 24, then burned him alive and fired several shots into him. Over the next several days, the satanic savages beat and raped his girlfriend, Shannon Christian, 23, and took turns urinating on her. On the fourth day, they cut off her breasts, stuffed a large variety of toxic chemicals, including floor cleaner, into her mouth, then slowly stabbed her to death. Not a word about this unspeakable crime was heard on the nightly news, because NBC, CBS, CNN, ABC, Fox, and all the rest of the alphabetical deceivers were obsessed at the time with the phony Duke University rape case. There was no appeal to the sensitivities of millions of regular viewers. No social services liberals thought to comfort the families of the white victims. The torture and murder of two young white people by five blacks is not a hate crime in the FBI's book. And Reverends Sharpton and Jackson had nothing to say. Their silence is part of the deliberate censorship of any information harmful to the artificial, false image of blacks perpetrated by America's news media masters. They realize that such censorship of the truth is vital to their race-mixing agenda. Yet we are invited to embrace these killer gorillas as our equals, no, as our physical, moral, and intellectual superiors. What then can we expect for the future? Unchecked, the forces of decline will climax in mid-century. Given the continuous and accelerating inundation of the United States by waves of immigrants from south of the border, Africa, Asia, India, and the Middle East, our continent's white population will have slipped to minority status before 2050. By then, our race will have become so polluted through interbreeding with subhumans, its identity will be progressively marginalized until it no longer exists. The next 40 years will also witness America's inevitable economic conquest by Red China and India, the very countries past U.S. presidents were so anxious to assist. Our standard of living will plummet to levels comparable with Ecuador or Somalia. Companies and businesses here will be largely Asian-owned, and Americans will have to work for mostly colored bosses. The U.S. dollar will eventually become so weak it must be replaced by some international currency. With health care largely in the hands of physicians from Pakistan or the Philippines, medical help will be rendered virtually useless, and certainly unable to keep pace with too many viral strains introduced by the endless deluge of germ-carrying colored immigrants. As in any fundamental social dislocation, a tsunami of criminal bloodshed will sweep across North America. Since white people by then will have been disarmed by gun control fanatics, their spirit of resistance diluted by decades of instilled health self-hatred, and all police forces predominantly black and brown, pale-faced victims can expect little protection and less mercy. They will suffer the same kind of massacres carried out in the past against hapless whites by Indian savages on the American plains. By then, the Bill of Rights promised that, quote, the right of the people to bear arms, unquote, will have been wiped away by the enemies of white America. One of its most prominent founders, Thomas Jefferson, insisted that, quote, no free man shall ever be debarred the use of arms against tyranny in government. The tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants, unquote. In the years to come, only ruins and garbage will be left to show that the world was once inhabited by temporarily civilized but ultimately self-destructive human beings. Sounds like a rather bleak scenario for the future. That certainly is what the evangelists of race mixing want us to believe. Things have gone too far for some white Americans. They have given up without a fight, resigned themselves and their posterity to defeat and oblivion. They point out the shameful fact that a black man, worse, a mongrel half-breed, is now President of the United States. It was not the combined support of Negroes and Hispanics that won the election for him. Their endorsement could have been expected. No, he was voluntarily installed in the White House by a solid majority of white voters, the same people being exterminated by the very elements he himself personally embodies. More than 65 years ago, Adolf Hitler warned U.S. servicemen during World War II that their taking up arms against his racially aware country would inevitably backfire on them by putting a Negro in the White House. They laughed at him. The vast majority of white Americans in the 1940s regarded blacks then as little more than subhuman clowns, hardly worthy of attention. The very notion of a black-faced president had more in common with a comedy skit than anything in the foreseeable future. Yet, some of those Second World War veterans who once thought Hitler's prediction so amusing are no longer laughing. A colored chief executive was unthinkable, ludicrous even, until the early 1970s, when big city mayoral positions and state governorships were first occupied by Negroes. If a black mayor, some argued, why not a black president someday? Coincidental with the blacks' advancing political power, all mainstream avenues of public information joined at every level of education to wring the last ounce of racial self-respect from our people. They were psychologically conditioned to embrace every manifestation of racial suicide in a comprehensive campaign as ubiquitous as it was relentless, a two-prong attack morally undercut white Americans by stressing their original sin of racism while constantly heroizing blacks as altogether superior, lovable creatures. Only decades of unrelieved and concerted propaganda made a Negro president possible. Without this incessant programming, such an incomparable disgrace would never have come to pass. Blacks are self-evidently too dim-witted to have achieved anything on their own. They represent merely a means to an end, namely the lethal pollution of our race. Once a white people have been poisoned by interbreeding, they disappear forever from the face of the earth, never to return. The original white builders of Egypt, Iran, Persia, India, and all the other lands that so long ago flourished utterly vanished, their formerly vibrant cultures reduced to dead ruins when they renounced the irreplaceable heritage of their pure blood. Racially weakened, their societies were beset by uncontrollable criminal violence, moral rot, economic collapse, political corruption, and cultural decay, until foreigners obliterated them. As the historian Will Durant warned us during the last century, quote, "A great civilization is not conquered from without until it has destroyed itself from within," unquote. America is not exempt from that iron law, with Red China poised to take over from the United States as the next superpower. Accordingly, the U.S. seems doomed to repeat the same kind of suicide committed by past civilizations, and nothing can be done to stop it, so long as the majority of Americans are either indifferent to their country's fate or actually aiding and abetting it. So, what are you going to do? Let it go? Will you allow yourself to be pushed into the background and told to shut up, afraid to raise your voice in a feeble word of protest? Isn't there anything you can do that really matters? There is, and it has nothing whatsoever to do with complaining to your congressman, signing petitions, or writing to a newspaper editor. Your enemies brush aside such obsolete methods with a contemptuous laugh. The very first thing you have got to do is get mad. No one can do anything really meaningful unless they're consumed with justifiable anger. God knows you have more to be enraged about than you can even imagine. But you know enough about white kids beaten by Afro-American gangsters. You know enough about white women raped and tortured by black monsters. You know enough about the anti-white lies you're supposed to swallow in silence. You've got to get up and shout in the face of your enemy, "I'm a white American, damn it, and I'm not going to take your race-mixing crap anymore!" The psychotic Negrophiles are quick to denounce and label anyone who fails to embrace their savage yahoos as haters. But if you cannot hate someone who threatens your own loved ones with suffering and death, you're a failure as a human being. Anyone who won't defend those they love for fear of giving offense is a worthless coward. We can and will no longer be silenced by the race-mixing bullies pushing our world towards extinction. We will no longer be made ashamed of being white while others insist on black pride. We will not allow ourselves to be weakened by all those numerous, relatively petty differences that divide white men and keep us from forming a united front against the haters of our betrayed people. Those differences, how otherwise significant they may seem, must be put aside and not allowed to deflect one degree from our unity as white men and women. We must draw our wagons into a circle, close up our ranks in an unbreakable flank. Political, religious, class, ideological, or any of the other sorts of differences that threaten to divide our racial solidarity must be avoided. All that counts now is our self-awareness as white men and women. And anyone who attempts to detract one ounce from our racial unity has joined the enemies of white America. That the majority hates us or simply doesn't care about the survival of white America means nothing. When George Washington and his fellow revolutionaries took on the British Empire, the most powerful machine of its kind on earth, they were opposed by a solid majority of their own countrymen. Most people couldn't have cared less one way or the other. More than a third of Americans hated the Patriots, who were supported by just 15% of the colonial population. And from that small minority, only a fractional percentage actually participated in the war for independence. Yet, these few activists, against the will of a pro-British majority, themselves embodied a majority of willpower and energy to expel powerful invaders from our country. The American patriots who achieved this miracle were not liberals. They did not love their enemies. They were proud to be robust haters of the foreigners who imposed a frightful tyranny on the United States. The same situation confronts us today. Most white Americans are indifferent to the present decline and future destruction of their own race. To them, the only things that matter are making money and wasting their lives watching television. A majority of our fellow countrymen and women have been reduced to brainwashed lemmings, but not all of them. National election results for the past few years, where race-conscious candidates have run for office, have conclusively shown that 15% of our people understand and loathe the anti-white haters who have pushed us to the brink of extinction. That doesn't sound like much, but 15% of the U.S. population fleshes out into 37 million race-conscious white Americans. Within those 37 millions lies a 3% minority of 75,000 potential activists, a veritable army of warriors. The chief task of the anti-white establishment has always been to drive a wedge between the 37 million white people who have not yet lost their souls to race mixing and the 75,000 fighters who can lead them to victory over the corruptors of our racial integrity. Anyone who can appreciate the high significance of these percentages understands at once that he or she is not an isolated individual, a freak for refusing to embrace the race-mixed propaganda of our times, unlike most everyone else. On the contrary, there are millions and millions of white Americans just as inwardly disgusted and repelled by the colored pollution of our people as we are ourselves. These numbers may encourage us, but our resistance must not depend on them. If the spirits of America's proudly racist founding fathers could return to see how we, their descendants, have allowed the liberty they fought and died for to have been stolen by repulsive fugitives from the African jungle, they would command us as Patrick Henry did. "We must fight," he said. Listen to these words he spoke more than 200 years ago. Quote, "I repeat it, sir, we must fight. An appeal to arms and the God of hosts is all that is left to us. Should I keep back my opinions at such a time through fear of giving offense, I should consider myself as guilty of treason toward my country. Why stand we here idle? What is it that the gentlemen wish? What would they have? Is life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death." Unquote. That is the real American spirit that defied all the powers of hell and stood up to the hostile majority and won. It is a spirit no longer seen in our fellow countrymen, because they have been lulled to sleep by the criminal conspirators against our lives, our liberty, and our posterity. How many more of our friends and family have to be mugged by black or Hispanic cowardly punks before you're mad enough to fight? How many more white kids are you going to allow to be beaten by colored gangbangers? How many more formerly white women must mate with darksome subhumans and bear their degraded offspring before our race is bred out of existence? For God's sake, man, get some guts! If you think things are bad now, just wait until 2040, when white people slip to minority status in the U.S. We've already become a minority in the American Southwest, and in major cities such as Chicago, where the white residents have been reduced to just one quarter of the total population, with a resultant spike in violent crime across the Windy City. Today, white people are already outnumbered by 8-to-1 odds on Earth. The American countdown has begun. Every 29 seconds, another illegal alien penetrates the United States. Every 10 minutes, another poisonous half-breed is spawned inside our borders. These hard facts embody the harsh truth about the real condition of our country. Get this through your head! America is threatened with death! Our struggle is for nothing less than our survival. Nothing in our lives is more important. No sacrifice we can make on its behalf too great. This struggle also ennobles us, however. It provides anyone who personally champions its cause the highest self-respect, because it embodies the brightest truth in this age of lies. The truth, hidden or knocked to the ground, always rises again to reveal itself. But it is not enough to see through the anti-white bias of our day. In itself, the most magnificent sword is no more than an inanimate object until someone has the courage to grasp it firmly by the handle and wield it against his enemies. So, too, a hidden truth is worthless until it is unsheathed and used to boldly cut down all liars. Patrick Henry and his fellow patriots knew the hard truth of their times and were brave enough to raise it in defense of liberty. They were not black or Latino or Jewish or octoroon, such as that racial anomaly in the White House. His installation is only a benchmark in the death of the United States. More significantly, however, it is a national wake-up call that remaining 15% of white Americans yet aware of their own racial identity can hear and understand. It means that the hour for their survival is very late. The alarm is blaring with terrible urgency. Let that same signal also reignite the revolutionary spark of our white forefathers. Let it catch your own soul on fire and spread its flames across our betrayed nation. Some 65 years ago, a nameless hero, one among millions of warriors, declared, quote, "In times of gravest danger, the soul of our people erupts with elemental force to fend off all mortal blows and to assert itself. The soul's energy proves itself stronger than any numerical or material superiority. General readiness escalates to the highest action. What does his life mean to the individual if the sacred life of his race is threatened? He sacrifices himself so that that greater life is won. Superhuman feats are performed, and the word impossible is no longer known." Unquote. White America isn't dead yet. On the contrary, the sleeping giant is stirring from his propaganda-induced trance. And when he fully awakens, the puny enemies and congenital liars that scheme to kill him in his sleep will scatter like diseased vermin at the sight of his all-consuming rage. On your feet, white man! Stand up and fight!
Well, boys and girls, that's it for Moon's Day. Yeah, tick, tick, tick. The military-industrial complex party is running the show. And whether it's Hillary or whether it's Trump, they both are big supporters of the military-industrial complex. Now they're upset because of this NATO thing. NATO should have been eliminated a long time ago, after the Soviet Union fell, maybe before. NATO is nothing but a troublemaker for both the Europeans and Americans. Time to get our troops out of Germany and all these European countries. Get the people out of the EU and let them run their own government and let them have their own defense. or they should insist on it. They should riot about it. I say impeach the military-industrial complex. You don't hear any of these, hardly any of these Republicans ever crying about the military-industrial complex. Except for, we need more money. They need more money to protect us. Horseshit. That is unadulterated horseshit. And if you looked into it, you know. That's it for today, Moon's Day. I'll be back tomorrow on Tears Day. And don't forget 14.5 and this show I just played for you. Record it, play it back every once in a while because you need to know it. Because you're surrounded by idiots and morons who either don't want to listen to you or they love what they're doing, bringing millions of people into this country. Even if they were white, I mean, it could be a problem. Come on. They're insane, man. Insane.